Bay Hills Community Church is pleased to have you with us as we continue our series, Commitment. Today, we look at commitment to kids as we're led by Nate Cummings, our children's pastor. We're reminded why kids matter so much and that there need to be resources and time set aside for them. Listen as Nate helps us find ways to give something to the generations that come after us. Things like faith, relationships, and caring as we remind children that they are created in the image of God.
Good morning. Hey, my name is Nate. I'm the children's pastor here at Bay Hills. Love kids. Thank you. Basically, what I do is I try to guide and direct and create the experiences and events and things for kids. And on Sunday morning, that includes birth through sixth grade. We do stuff on the other side of that wall, stuff in the middle of the week every once in a while, big events, and try to come alongside parents and families and what we can do for kids, which is probably why David asked me to speak today. We're doing this series on commitment. Last week, David's dad, Jim, talked about faith and the importance of what faith is in our own lives. And that takes sacrifice. It's uncomfortable. But faith is required to please God, and God does amazing things in us because of faith. And today, I'm here to talk about kids ministry, and why kids matter so much. And when I say commitment to kids, this really is not just for parents. I believe that there's something collectively and individually that every one of us, whether we have kids, we used to have kids in the house, we never had kids around, there's something that God has designed for us as a body, as a church, and as a people, that we need to leverage our commitment to kids, that we need to set aside time and resources to love kids and go after kids. And so that's what today's about. I wanted to share a bunch. I was trying to figure out what do I share, and taking time to think and to pray, and what I was thinking about when I was a kid and what made the difference in my own life. And one of the things that I was thinking about when it came to me being a kid was how much I loved Star Wars. Any of you out there that love Star Wars? Okay, the Sours, right? For sure. I love Star Wars. I grew up loving Star Wars, and you know, I was old enough to see just the first trilogy. I was a period of my own life. There wasn't the prequels. There weren't all of the other things around. I only knew the original series. Now I'm not old enough to have seen the original series when it first came out, but I love the original, and I fell in love with it as a kid. And just a few weeks ago, I went with my family to Disneyland, and they are celebrating Star Wars and the Season of the Force and a bunch of different things that they're doing. And they set up this really cool place where you get to see stormtroopers actually walk around and like talk to you and interact. And it was awesome to see my little boy Levi, he's 4 years old, go, and he's starting to love Star Wars. And there was this one little spot where they had carved out a movie where you could go watch and see how they made the films, the different people that are a part of making the story of Star Wars now, and how they're expanding the universe. There's this one guy that's actually in charge of helping craft the story, because it's a whole universe. There's animated stuff, there's books, and there's movies that are coming out, and how all those things come together. And he's sharing how he, as a kid, loved Star Wars, and now he's trying to help craft these things to carry on to the next generation of kids that are going to love Star Wars. And I get to be a part of it now, too. So there's something, as I'm watching this, I'm like, yeah, because I have a little boy, and he loves Star Wars. He has all of the characters, and he has it all down. I remember showing him the very first Star Wars movie, and we're trying to figure out, okay, which do we actually show him as the first? Is it number 4, the first one that actually came out and you see it that in that progression? Or is it number 1 and or like there's these Lego things that are out there that show the Star Wars story? What do we show him? And we're talking about this, and we're excited because me and my wife, we love Star Wars, and we wanted to share it with him. And we're seeing this guy talk about the same thing, about how carrying this on to the next generation of things that maybe those kids, they've never experienced, but we have. And so I want them to experience the same thing that I experienced as a kid. And there's those things in our life, right? Things that we love and we enjoy and we want to carry them on to the next generation. Which leads me to this quote, which I think captures what we're trying to do this today. Ridge Joyner, he's a children's pastor turned curriculum. He's behind a lot of the stuff that we do here. He shares this: every generation has two critical responsibilities. One, to leverage the efforts and ideas of the generation that came before it. And two, to fuel the innovations and faith of the generation that is coming behind it. I think our commitment to kids has a lot to do with this, is learning from the past and the people that have come before us to then carry on to the next generation, faith and innovation. There's so much that I would want my little boy Levi to know and to learn as he grows. But there's things he doesn't. He doesn't know what he doesn't know, right? And so I've got to teach him, like, how to, like, a lightsaber. You go, you flick it out and you do this. And you've got to have a blaster, which he just calls a pew-pew. It's like, I got a pew-pew. And he turns everything into a pew-pew. And so do I have more Star Wars or do I hold it back because he's a boy? And he'll, like, am I feeding into the violence? I don't know. And I'm trying to figure this stuff out. But there's these things that I love and I want to carry it on. And I want to see him get excited about. And in faith and in life, that's what our responsibility is. Whether you have kids or you don't, you are all a part of this generation. And we've got another generation that's coming up behind us. So what are we going to hand them? What are we going to give them in regards to life, faith, relationship, caring, how to get to know each other? So many things. How is that going to happen? I believe it happens you have to have it as a commitment. You've got to commit to doing it. It doesn't just happen by accident. It's something collectively and individually that we've got to commit to. And so there's a passage where Jesus actually talks about this. Jesus, that's what he came here to do. He came to teach things to people, to disciples, so that they then can carry it on. And there's this one interaction that's seen in both Matthew, Mark, and Luke, where he explains, I believe, the value of kids and kids ministry and what we do for the next generation. And it's found in Matthew 18. And so if you want to turn there, you can, or flip to it. I'm going to have it up on the screen. And in Matthew 18, this is what we see. We've got the bunch of disciples gathered around all the time, like they're following Jesus everywhere. And this is what we read in Matthew 18. He says, at that time, the disciples came to Jesus saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And calling to him a child, he puts him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So you see here, he's making a statement about the value of being a kid or being like a kid. And in another one in Mark, it talks about this, that the disciples were actually arguing about this. I think what was happening is, as they're going around, Jesus is describing the kingdom of heaven. He's saying the kingdom of heaven is like this, and he's describing this thing that is to come. And everybody, this disciple specifically, they're getting excited. They're like, oh, that's going to be awesome. This is going to be so cool. I want to be sitting like right next to Jesus. Like, okay, how do I do that? To be the greatest in this place that's so awesome, how do I do that? What do I do to get this thing? Because I don't want to be without it. Because the way Jesus is describing this, this has got to be great. Well, but then it turns into arguing. And Jesus takes this opportunity to explain, in order to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, he takes the circle of friends and he places a kid in the middle. And I can imagine my little boy Levi, he probably hugs him, puts his arm around him and says, you got to be like him. You got to be like a child in order to get it. If you receive a child like this, you receive me. I don't know exactly what that means yet. I'm learning. Because there are some things that I think about when I think of kids, right? I mean, I've got a 4-year-old. Last year, he was a 3-year-old. And I learned this phrase called a three-nager. He's acted like a three-nager at many times. It's like, okay, who are you and how did you reason and logic like that against me? Like, you're like a little miniature adult, like, are fighting back with me and like, what's going on here? And there's emotions and things that are going on. He's learned now that he's four, this independence, this fierce at times independence from his mom and dad, because he knows he's learned he doesn't have to do everything with us. He doesn't have to depend on us for everything. And so he fights for that. And there's a lot of different things. Middle schoolers, high schoolers, I would include them in this sermon, this the kids. It's not just little ones. It's everybody under the age of 18 or around, and what we do for the younger generation. Like, if I think about those kids, okay, what are you actually meaning, God? Because there are some things there that I don't know about. I do think he is highlighting their dependence, their vulnerability, the opportunity to influence them, their humility in times, what we can do in their life and how we can shape them and what's going on in their life as they are kids and growing up. He goes on to say this about kids too, that expands this idea of kids. This next part of the verse, he says, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me. So if you receive a child, you do something to help a child, to love on them, to care for them, you receive Jesus. Part of loving children and being there for kids is actually about learning how to be a disciple and follow Jesus. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. Wow, that's a refreshing verse. I can imagine what's happening here, because a lot of the sermons that Jesus preaches, the things that he says with his disciples, a lot of them happened around the Sea of Galilee. He would go to these little towns around the sea, and it was, they would probably be sitting on a hillside, and I could imagine he's seeing this donkey pull this stick that's attached to this big, huge, round stone. Some of them are like this big around, and it's pulling it around, crushing the grain. And making it into flour or wheat or something. And I can imagine he's sitting on the edge of this big, huge sea, and he's seeing these donkey pulling this big grain millstone. He's like, okay, if you get in the way, if you hinder, if you cause one of these little ones to sin, take that, tie it around your neck, jump in the sea. Whoa, okay. I think Jesus here is making a point that there's something to be heeded, something to be considered, something to keep in our mind and our heart about how we treat kids. How we love kids. And I want to make this statement, and this is not a statement about a value, but it's a statement definitely about purpose or effort or action, what we do to strategize, to invest, and it's this: kids matter more than adults. I think everybody matters, everybody has value, but I think in the way that we as a church specifically, the time, the money, the resources, what we do to leverage what we have, to love kids, to go after kids, to do everything we can to set them up for success, to make sure that we're not getting in the way of what's going on in their life and to see them flourish. Kids matter more than adults. I think maybe this might be something that some of you are going, yeah, that's right. Others are like, okay, yeah, I get it. Like, yeah, we as a church, we believe in kids, but maybe you're not a parent. Maybe you don't have kids. So what does that look like for you? Well, I'm going to talk about that. I believe Jesus cared about kids so much that he showed his disciples, if you want to receive me, receive a kid. And it takes a lot to love a kid. Often, I sometimes travel like to speak at a camp or help a church out or even just around the town, actually here, getting a haircut. I'm in conversations with people, and they find out that I work with kids. And they make certain statements, and some of them I laugh at, some of them I'm like, okay. But like, you know, they make statements like, oh, bless you. Like, oh, I'll pray for you. Sometimes it's out of like a genuine, like, you're doing great work. Like, way to go. Like, that's awesome. That's so cool. Other times it's like, I'm so glad that's you and not me. and they make statements like, oh, I'll pray for you. And I know Dave Sauer and I were talking about this. It's like, that's one that kind of like sometimes gets at him. And one for me sometimes is, if you reference, what we do over there as childcare, like I'll go Mount Vesuvius on. That is not childcare. It is so much more than that. It is purposeful and meaningful, and there's so much that we're doing to invest in the lives of kids. And but I get it, right? I mean, like loving on kids or being around kids, it's hard. It means staying up late. It means getting woken up in the middle of the night. Dad, I need this. And it means sometimes my son's like jumping on me and I'm like, okay, like, it means, you know, sometimes you're getting thrown up on and changing diapers, right? I did that the other week, like in the nursery. Like, it's messy. It's hard dealing with teenagers. Sometimes, I'm sorry, teenagers, like I was one too. And sometimes it's hard. And there's so many things that are difficult about kids. They have attitudes and they have emotions and they don't quite get how to deal with certain things. I get it. Like, it is difficult. I can't convince you otherwise. What I want to convince you is they matter more than, and we need to put more energy into them. And they matter so much that no matter what the cost, that we love them, we care for them. Because yeah, they are going to throw up on you. They're going to poop and you got to change the diapers and they're going to do all of those things. They're going to have hard days and you're going to have to try to be patient through it. And you know, when they're screaming back at you, trying to hold yourself and hold that anger back and try to be loving and kind and parent the way you believe you're supposed to parent. And you're going to see your kids grow up and not sure what's going on with them. You might sit down with a kid and they're broken and trying to figure out life. And they're asking you questions about, why did dad leave? You know, they're gonna ask you questions about, okay, dad actually died, and what do I do with that? They're gonna ask questions about faith in God, and they're gonna, things are gonna happen, and you gotta be there, and maybe you don't have all the answers, You gotta sit with a kid who's struggling with addiction. You gotta sit with a kid who, at camp, you're restraining for a half hour to keep him safe while he has an emotional episode. Things happen, and you hold that kid, and time passes, and you don't know what to do, you don't know what to say. You listen to kids share about what's going on at home, and you don't want to send that kid home. You send that kid home, and you don't know enough to keep them from going home, but enough to stay up late, and you're waiting for that text message to make sure that they're safe when they arrive home. You're there sitting with a junior high girl crying while you call the cops on their family, and you are waiting. And then you're calling CPS because of things that are going on. There are so many stories that I could share with you about kids and why they matter. Sometimes we let those bad things, those hard things, those difficult things keep us from being present in the life of a kid to speak this message that every child, every kid is made in the image of God. See, I think sometimes we are so programmed to see the wrong in kids that we forget to see what's right in kids. Every single child is made in the image of God. We see that in Genesis, and he writes that out, and it's spoken throughout Scripture. Every single child. That emotional 3-year-old, 4-year-old that's like starting to have individuality and starting to scream back at you, made in the image of God. That curious, squirrely little 2nd grader, 3rd grader, that you can't control and he's just going all over the place, made in the image of God. Hormonal teenagers, yeah. Falling away, close. That special needs kid, made in the image of God. But do they know it? Have they been told it? Are they treated like such? Or do we sit back and go, I don't know if I could herd those cats. I don't know if I could go in that zoo or that. I don't know if I can deal with that chaos, even if it's organized. I mean, we're organized back there, and we do some great stuff. You know, we're nowhere near perfect in children's ministry in there, but we're trying to be present with those kids to teach them that they're made in the image of God. Those 2 points are the first two that I had little outlines there for you. I believe kids matter more than adults and that they're made in the image of God. And I believe we see it in Scripture. I believe Jesus highlighted it. And we should leverage that because our time is short. You see, the time that we have to actually influence a child in the way that they should go, there's a proverb about that. Train a child in the way he should go and he will not depart from it. That time is short. As parents, you are the number one influence in a child's life. By far, you are the number one influence in a child's life. And it starts from birth. You have this positional influence. You maybe see this actually in businesses too. Positional authority, positional influence. Just because I'm dad, I actually can influence him. Because I'm dad, I can say, okay, he'll argue back. Like, I'm like, okay, I know you, who's the parent here? Who's the adult? I'm the parent. I'm the adult. Like, you're supposed to listen to me. And that shifts though over time. So here's a little graph to kind of describe this. Positional influence at the top, and say they're born and you're dad and you love them, they care for you, you say certain things and they listen, they learn from you. But over time that diminishes. They get to be in middle school. They get to graduate high school. They move out. And your positional influence decreases over time, which begs for relational influence to increase. Just because you're dad, it starts to not be enough. Just because you have a position as a teacher isn't enough. And our need to get to know in a deeper way and have a relationship with kids makes a it matters. It's needed. And there's this intersection of influence that ends up happening throughout time, and it's different for every kid. But there are eventually these other voices that come speaking into a kid's life. And as they get older, those voices start to scream louder than your position as a parent or an uncle or an aunt or grandma and grandpa. Social media, circle of friends, They get their driver's license. They get a cell phone. They get a tablet, a computer, a TV. All these other things are influenced in our kids' lives. And we got to realize that they do influence our kids. And the younger that they are, the bigger influence that they have. In 1998, many of you maybe voted on this. Proposition 10 was passed, which started in California, First Five. Any of you heard First Five? We voted on, let's put millions and millions of dollars into figuring out how we could leverage the first 5 years of a kid's life. A whole bunch of educators and developmental psychologists came together and were starting to put together these studies that were showing that what happens in those first 5 years makes a tremendous difference in the life of a child. Like things like the number of words a mom says or speaks to a child when they're like two. And the difference that makes when they're then in school as an elementary or high school student, they actually saw a correlation that and many other statistics about what we do in the first 5 years of a kid's life makes a tremendous difference to set them on a trajectory in life for success, for amazing fulfillment and joy and happiness and so much else. And in faith, it's true too. Did you know that of all the Christians, if you're a Christian here today, the likelihood that you came to faith before the age of 14 is like really, really high, like 70%+ or something like that. I could tell you the odds. Do you want to know the odds? Like they're high, like really, really high. Did anybody get that? Star Wars reference. If they get beyond 14, though, the likelihood of them becoming a Christian starts to diminish. It's like 95% by the age of 30. So if you're not a Christian by the age of 30, so the whole young adult spectrum, high school into college, young adult college, if we don't catch them there, the likelihood that they're going to become a Christian and have a life of faith and develop community within the church, it's just not there. So if we don't get them now, we've lost them. Which begs to say, like, we've got to leverage. We got to make sure that we believe and we understand and we act and live like kids matter more than adults. Everyone matters. Everyone, I love everyone. God has value and he sees all of us because you and me were made in the image of God. But in the way that we act as a church, the way we live our lives individually this week, is what you're doing going to make the difference in the life of a child? Our time is short. There's a practice illustration that I want to share with you that actually highlights this. Right here behind me, I have a jar. This is a jar of 936 marbles. I know because my wife told me. She counted, I think she took like 1,000 and counted back or something like that. 936. This represents how many weeks of influence that you have with a child from when they're born till they graduate high school. And the illustration goes like this. Every week goes by, take out a marble. And you start to count time. And a visual representation of how much time we have left to try to influence a child and see them succeed and develop faith in them. So that by the time that they're in second grade or third grade, you've got maybe 572 left. Week after week after week, you take a marble out. When you start to count and see visually the time, it makes a difference. For me, the more I do things like this, the more that I remember, even though sometimes I don't want to, remember the stories of things that have happened in kids' lives that are hard, it makes me want to make the time that I do have left matter. That what I do this week, what I do today, makes a difference in the life of someone else, in my own kid. Because by the time he's a junior in high school, there's not many more weeks left. And they're going to go into this world and live, and hopefully succeed and thrive. I want that for every kid. But did I make the time that I had with them matter? Did I invest in them early on? Did I teach them about faith and life? Did I teach them about friendship? About what it means to sit down with someone and listen to their hurts and pains and pray for them and encourage them? Did I do things that helped shape their life? from the time that they're born to the time that they graduate high school, what are we going to do? What am I going to do? It's just a phase. So don't miss it. It's the third bullet point. Each one of these times, these opportunities that we have in a kid's life, it's really just a phase, and it's over like that. So we better not miss it. So what can I do in the life of a preschooler? What can I do in the life of an elementary kid, age kid? Or what can I do in a middle school or a high school? What can I do to leverage that opportunity, that distinct opportunity, to see them go in a different direction or a better direction or develop even and even healthier? This book is in the back. And some of the stuff I just referenced is actually in this. There's several different things that I could share from this that I want every single one of you to have, which is why I have like 100 copies back there. You can buy them for $5. They're worth 11, but we got a great deal on them, and I want you to have them in your hands. If you don't have $5, take it. If you will read it, you could read it in 5 minutes if you just read the illustrations here on the left, or you could do a little bit deeper and over a few hours, read more. But in it, it talks about some of this. It's just a phase, so don't miss it. It talks about these invisible questions that kids have that sometimes we don't see, well, what we don't see. Kind of like, I've heard some statements like that. I'm just like, yeah, duh, right? You don't see what you don't see. But if we can learn to read the invisible questions your kids are asking at every phase, you will have a different kind of influence on their future. So preschool, elementary, middle school, high school. There's these different opportunities. So since every phase of a kid's life has a unique challenges, you should become aware of the kind of questions that are asked at each phase. Preschoolers tend to ask, am I questions? Am I safe? Am I okay? Am I able? Elementary age kids tend to ask, do I questions? Do I have your attention? Do I have what it takes? Do I have any friends? As they move toward middle school, there is a shift in the nature of a child's questions. They become more philosophical and relational. Middle school students tend to ask questions like, who do I like? Who am I? Where do I belong? During high school, the questions continue to shift from concrete to abstract, from black and white to various shades of gray. Why should I believe? How can I matter? What will I do? At the center of each question is the pronoun I. That's because each of these questions reflects a part of a child's developing identity. How you respond to these questions can shape who your son or daughter becomes. So don't miss it. It's just a phase, so don't miss it. There's so much more. This actually comes from a whole project that Reggie Joyner, I referenced, is leading. It's a bunch of church leaders. It's a bunch of psychologists, a bunch of educators that are coming together and trying to put together all this research, all this understanding that we now have, and trying to understand how can we leverage each phase? What can we do? There's one book back there that they just came out with about birth and 1 year old, and I think it was a 1 and 2 coming out, and we're trying to rally and gather these resources, and I want to give them to you. I want to help you understand how you can leverage those phases, whether you have a kid at home or giving ways that even if you don't have a child at home, ways that you can help us collectively and individually reach kids, see kids come to know Christ and have a understanding that they are made in the image of God. That they have this creative potential, this divine capacity inside of them to love and to create and to trust. That they can lead and direct and mold and reason. That there's so much inside of a kid. And we want to see it come out. We want to see it thrive. And you and I can be a part of that. I am who I am today because of, well, my parents are here. I know what it means to serve others because my dad would have me and my brother stay late after baseball games and flip up the bleachers and sweep the stands and so many other things and go into Mexico and so many things I remember doing with my dad that shaped who I am and my mom helping me understand the Bible and going to BSF, a Bible study thing, and helping me understand what it meant to have sorrow and still learn through it. And so many things of who I am is because of my parents. The number one influence in a child's life is their parents, but they are not the only influence that a child needs as they grow up. See, there's also some guys named Dino Rossetti and Dave Miller that week after week after week, they helped lead Bible studies for kids in junior high and high school. And they went up actually with me and helped me understand what it meant to live life and to ask questions about the Bible and understand it in ways that I didn't before. There were guys like Todd Baltzy who flung me around on a water tube and crashed me off and had fun on water camp. And it was crazy. But he loved me and he cared for me when I was this awkward junior higher and high schooler. Scott Matthews, Brant Perrigo. There's also ladies, Lori Kelly, Jody Lewis, who became my mother-in-law. And so many people. I am who I am because of the soul sum of the relationships that I had growing up. And it wasn't just my parents. I know what it's like to live, to have faith because of these people that sacrificed. Some of them were parents. Some of them weren't. But they gave time on Wednesday nights. They gave time on Sunday mornings to play in a band, to run the computer, to set up, to get a truck and move things here and there, to put on events, to do all sorts of things, to be at soccer games. Ed Machado, he was my soccer coach growing up and helped in that and a few other guys and helped me understand what it meant to fight hard and work hard and learn and grow in ways that I didn't know possible in sports, that gave me the confidence to do other things later on. So many ways that other adults poured into my life, that to put even if it was a small, they put a deposit in my life that then came into today, to what I do now. What is it that you're going to do this week, today, to invest in the life of someone else, into the next generation? What are you going to do to help whoever is within your sphere of influence? Maybe it's a kid, your own kid. Maybe it's a niece or nephew. Maybe it's kids that you could go and serve here on Sunday mornings or Tuesday nights. We've got junior high or our high school is on Wednesday nights. And screaming for more adults. We're having more and more kids come. Kids ministry grew by 10% last year. Middle school and high school grew by 25% last year. Like, it's awesome to see more and more kids coming to know Christ. But you know what's also happening? I get 20 kids in one group with one leader. What kind of influence do I have on Sunday morning when that happens? When I only have maybe 40 hours on a given year to influence a kid through church. And in that 40 hours, maybe I'm trying to rally 12 kids or 15 kids. Or what kind of influence is that? But what if I had 6 kids and one adult? Maybe you're not equipped. Maybe you don't know what to do. That's okay. The leaders I referenced, I've got to know them as friends growing up and hearing their stories and to seeing what that got them in the ministry, some of them. And many, didn't really realize what we could do and that we had it in us until we actually started and we responded to the call to serve and to be there, to be present in the life of a kid. One last thing I want to leave you with is to own it. Own, don't rent. Yeah, many of you may rent, may own, but I think you might understand that principle. The difference that you treat a car, the difference you treat your home when you own it versus if you're leasing or renting it is drastically different. The money that you invest in it, the time that you spend for it, the way that you care for the things that you own is far different than the things that you rent. This principle of owning something, I want to encourage every single one of you, young and old, with kids and with not, to own it. Not just collectively as a church, but personally. I remember last night, actually, I had dinner at Panera. And I love Panera. I love their food. And there was an employee having dinner on their break or something like that. And they went to go put their trash away, and they threw it away. Her napkin and a couple other things fell off her plate. And she proceeded to put her plate and go back to her station. Her station wasn't cleaning, like, at that moment. But is that a part of what we the manager or Panera might want for that experience. Flip that, Disney. So again, I love Disney. I've learned and studied and doing some stuff with Disney leadership and stuff, and it's been fun to kind of see some of the things that they put in place. Did you know the managers there are required to have trash pickers, like little like long sticky handles with them when they go walking around? And I think at one point even they had like docks on them if another employee saw a manager not pick up a piece of trash like and walk by it. One story that I heard was really, really, really interesting. Because like managers exemplifying the way that they want their employees to act, that makes sense to me as leadership. Like, okay, yeah, if I value it, I'm going to do it too. But here's the thing that I thought was really interesting is that they have stories of watching guests go and pick up trash and then go throw it away. Like not the employees, but people on rides and people around, like they'll go around and pick up the trash and they'll throw it away themselves. And I have to admit, I've done that too. I love Disney, and there's been times where like, I don't go out of my way, but I'm on a ride in the line or something like that, and there's a trash can right there because they have trash cans everywhere. There's a piece of trash there. I'm just like, you know, yeah, I'm pick it up and put it away. And like I love Disney so much that I want that for other people, like the cleanliness and the way they present themselves. And but I see it in us. It's so easy to take a back seat and to become renters. You know, something's broken and you call your landlord like, hey, the plumbing's broken, or hey, there's possums in the wall. I need to deal with that. there's things that happen that are different when you're an owner, when you own it. We did this thing, this class with Levi, this preschool training class on soccer and basketball, or not basketball, baseball and track and field or something it was like 3 and 4 year olds, which I guess you could do with 3 and 4 year olds, and a whole class. There was 6 of them, but there was this one teacher, coach, who led them through some stuff, and it was several weeks, and I would go with my wife, and we would sit and watch it happen. And the first week, the kids were all curious, and they were listening, and they would do mostly what the teacher was saying, and every once in a while there would be one kid that would go and literally go run and see the flowers. Oh, flower, like that's really cool. Or, oh, like look at that stuff over there. And the single parent would get up and go over to the kid and say, hey, no, sit here, watch this and do this. And then a couple weeks went on, and I started to notice something, that most of the parents were taking a back seat and letting the teacher teach, which makes sense. It totally makes sense. And every once in a while, they would go up and re-encourage, like, their kid to do what they should be doing and listening and everything. And I'd be doing the same thing. But then I was noticing that the teacher wasn't getting through everything in the way that I think she was wanting it to. She was very professional and kind, and it was great with kids. But I kind of picked up on it. There was this little bit of tension or frustration and not being able to get through what she wanted to, because the kids were not fully doing what they were doing, and she was the only one doing it. So the next week, I prayed about it. I was like, well, I don't want to overstep my boundaries because I'm not like the other kids' parents, right? Like, I'm just like this other person. I don't want to do that. But I'd like to try to see if I can help. And so the week came, and I picked up, and I went, and I just stood up near them instead of sitting down. And I just tried to take my lead from the coach. And she would say, hey, do this. And I would just say the same thing that she was saying. I would just say it again, but I was like on the other side of the kids, and they were over there. And the difference was amazing. It was so cool. Like, the kids actually played like more, and they were engaged more. And when one kid was off, it was quicker to get them back on track with what they were doing. And it just took me basically repeating mostly what she was saying. Now, I've got some training in this, but I realized, I think as parents and really just as people, we often take a back seat and say, well, that's somebody else's problem. Or somebody else is going to pick up that trash, or somebody else is going to go do that. Like, that's not my problem to fix. And I think with certain things that God puts in front of us, we need to ask the question, how can I own this myself? What is it in what God's given me, what is it that I can do this week, today, to help kids know and learn what it means to be made in the image of God? That they know that they matter. That they've got a place to belong. That they're known by name. What is it that I can do? Maybe it's giving tithes and offerings to this church. We're going to do that at the end of service. And, you know, this church, David and the elder board, they've set children's ministry as a primary ministry. They say it and they back it up. with our finances. Like, children's ministry is very well funded. Like, across the board, like, we have a lot that we can do to invest in toys and cleanliness, and we could do it in programs and events, a lot of different things. Many of you have given towards things like Easter, the Easter event that we had, and a Halloween event, like, to do amazing things for kids. This church, I believe, backs it up. And it does it from the top. So 1 week, we were down leaders in the back. And one guy was not preaching up here on front. And he heard that and he's like, hey, how can I help? And David Fossil was serving in our 2 and 3 year old room. Later, like I like almost like would cry to see a senior pastor exemplify that. To not think it above himself. And he's not trained, like some things are awkward about him and kids, but he's fun. And he was willing. And I think it was that willingness that allowed him to make a huge difference there on Sunday morning. What are you going to do to own it? Yeah, you've got jobs, you've got things in your life, and maybe you have kids not, like, but I get that. Like, but think about it, pray about it. What this week could you do? Maybe it's reading a book. Maybe it's figuring out how you can be better and understand kids better. We've got a bunch of them in the back. We're actually starting this library. And maybe you don't have money to buy books. Well, we've got a bunch of there that you can get for free. Just fill out the name, write down the number, and take the book home, read it, and bring it back. Because there's a lot of books that I've read that I'm like, oh, every parent should read this. This is awesome. Like, here, I don't have like $10,000 on every single book that I want to like give out to you. There's this one that we're going to be giving away for $5 to try to make it easier today. We got a bunch of them in the back to buy. There's a few others you could buy back there. As well as resources, like I referenced FaZe and the different things that other churches are doing. There's a bunch of resources that I have to give you that if you just spent the time to read, maybe it would help you in how you do what you do as a parent, what you do as a small group leader, what you do at, maybe it's education, maybe it's serving as a teacher. You already do that. Maybe it's just leveraging what you do as a teacher even more. Maybe it's serving with your kids in the class, but learning how you could do that better. We've got these things in the back. I've got a bunch of them. They're conversation guides. And this really is applicable to parents, but really anybody that's around kids. This one's about salvation, but there's other ones about bullying, about sexual purity, about internet, I believe, and crisis. There's these things for elementary kids and preschool and high school, and middle school. There's a bunch of different ones. And they're in the back. And you can take them. I read them over, things of what to say, what not to say. It's just a simple thing. It's not even double-sided. And spend some time learning. There's books about understanding cell phones and technology and what that's doing to our kids today. Take that home. Read it. But do something. Maybe it is giving your time to be present in the life of a kid. Maybe it's serving on Sundays or Tuesday nights or Wednesdays. We would love to have more help. And it's not just with the kids. It's also setting up and tearing down, walking kids to the bathroom. It's tech. It's a bunch of things. It's not just that. And if you're willing, we can show you. Maybe it's, though, not serving on Sunday morning. Maybe it's serving at your school, serving coaching or helping anywhere where there's kids. What can you do? What's in front of you? Think of your own kids or the things around you. And how can you leverage that to make it matter more? Because I would love to do everything that I have in my head and my heart to do, but I can't. I can't do it all, and I know that you can. And you want, many of you as parents, you want to do it all. You want to do everything you can, but you can't. But you can do something more. You can do something maybe different. Maybe it's taking dinner time and having different conversations around dinner. We have these parent cues, these things that do just that. What we teach on Sunday, here's some things to talk about at dinner time. Here's some things to talk about when you're driving around at school. We've got that we hand out every single month to help leverage what we're doing with the 40 some odd hours that we may have to influence your child, with the 4,000 hours that you might have with as a parent, to help partner and work together. What is it that you could do to serve, to be present? Maybe it's showing up for an event and helping when we do Halloween or Easter or a bunch of different things. There's a bunch of ways that you can help. Talk to us. Talk to Dave Sauer. Talk to me. I'm going to pray. And then after the prayer, the band's going to come up. They're going to lead a song and offering. But there's a psalm that I want to pray. It was powerful when I read it, and I wanted to make it a part of our prayer. So I want to ask you to pray with me right now. And I'm going to read the psalm, say a few words, and then we'll be done. Let's pray. We will not hide them from their children, but tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders that he has done. He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. Dear God, I pray that you would help us as a church commit to the next generation. Help us to leverage what we have to see them succeed and thrive. God, that many, many women and men would step up to serve, to be present in the life of another kid. God, show us what that looks like. Show us what we do today, this week. Every one of us can do something, and help us collectively to do something amazing and far beyond what we could imagine to shape the life of a child. Lord, we thank you and pray these things in your son's name, Jesus. Amen.
It's our hope that today's podcast has enriched your life and answered questions you may have had. If you'd like more information about what was said in this podcast or about Bay Hills Community Church, you can reach us on the internet at www.bayhills.net. Bay Hills, located in El Sobrante, California, exists to help everyone take their next step closer to Jesus. Thanks again for listening.